Hello, and welcome to Radio SGN. Just a refresher for any new people, the hosts of this podcast are me, Lindsay, my pronouns are she, her, and
Benny Loy, and my pronouns are she, they.
And we both work at the SGN. We are up to date in queer news because of that, I guess. So we're going to talk about the news. Welcome to our weird little podcast. So this week, our cover story at the SGN, if you've had a chance to pick up a copy, is Justice for Janavi. So you've probably heard about this, listeners, because it's been everywhere, viral on TikTok, viral on Twitter. But a body cam footage basically of a Seattle Police Department officer was released earlier this week after it was flagged by other people in the department for being wildly inappropriate. It eventually rose up through the ranks. It was released, and it is hard to listen to. The context of this, Janavi Kandula was killed in January. She was a student at Seattle University. She was crossing the street at a legal crosswalk when a police car going 75 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour zone on its way to a drug overdose case hit her and killed her. The response came from this officer, Daniel Otterer, who was responding to the scene to address what had happened, to see if the driver that hit and killed Kandula was under the influence of drugs or alcohol. He was not. But the recording was picked up from Otterer, who said, yeah, just write a check, $11,000. She was 26 anyway. She had limited value. Otterer is seen laughing on the tape repeatedly. And his response to the video was that he was being sarcastic and talking about the way that lawyers may handle the case. However, that just doesn't seem to coincide with what everybody has seen on this video. He was callous. He was casual when talking about the tragedy that had just happened. And even if he was being sarcastic, there's a time and a place, and joking about somebody's death right after it's happened is just horrendous.
It's interesting, too, that the context that he's talking about is seemingly not in the body cam footage. You know, they caught all of that, but not this apparent context.
Yeah. And I guess it's also important to note, he was having a conversation with somebody on the phone. So the other half of the conversation wasn't picked up by the body cam footage. But in my kind of deep dive into the story, despite the context that he's trying to say is unable to be understood because we only get one half of this conversation, Otterer still has a rich history of just sucking at his job, basically. He's been involved in so many conflicts. Before he even worked with the Seattle Police Department, he was investigated for stopping several Mexican immigrants under false pretenses. And also, he beat a mentally ill person so badly that this person he beat suffered significant brain damage. Then he started working with the Seattle Police Department. After that, he was accused of sexual harassment by a woman he arrested. He was recorded assaulting a homeless man in Harborview Medical Center. And in 2016, he used excessive force when arresting a Black woman, and then a different woman, he punched her in the face. So he has a long history of, I would just say, psychotic behavior. This is not normal people behavior. And I think maybe the most enraging thing about this story as of right now, and maybe it's not the most enraging thing because there are so many awful things involved in this story, from like initially this poor college student for crossing the street, which also onlookers noticed that if the cop, the driver, had been going 50 miles an hour, which he claimed he was not, he was going 75, there would have been time for her to run out of the way. She tried to run out of the way, but there was not time to go so fast, yeah. Which is so fucked.
And she was in a crosswalk.
Yeah, in a crosswalk. So she did nothing wrong. Both the officer that struck and killed her and Otterer, who made all of these callous comments about the incident, are still on retention, not even on paid leave right now while they're being investigated. And I found their salaries. So Otterer makes $148,571 a year.
Wow.
So he may have received a raise, but he's definitely not gotten any pay cuts. And the officer who killed Kandula, his last name is Dave, makes $95,380 a year. So this is where our tax dollars are going.
It is so frustrating because, you know, when I've gone out and I've spoken to cops at their different advisory committees and such and such, you know, they keep saying over and over and over again that they're trying to repair relationships with the community. And yet things like this just keep happening, you know? We just dealt with the break room incident.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people could give it leeway in this was in 2020. This is, you know, a different era with the police, a different chief. Like, we're trying to repair things. But then this happens.
Yeah.
How are we supposed to believe you? It's very hard for me because, you know, I want to believe that we're improving things. I want to believe that these programs and initiatives that the officers are touting are going to fix things and fix the police culture. But we're not seeing the effects of that. And, you know, you could say that a large portion of this is because of low staffing and different things like that, and police is being overworked. That's one of the common things that come up in all the meetings. But it doesn't matter if you're understaffed. It doesn't matter if you're overworked. This is not behavior that is acceptable in any way.
Well, yeah. And like people in every field, veterinarians are overworked right now. They don't kill people. Maybe they kill animals.
But they certainly don't make jokes about it, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's insane. It's the culture of policing. It is the history of it. It was created in a white supremacist culture. At least Black people, people of color, like Kandala. And I mean, sure, they maybe didn't mean to kill her, but they were callous in their her. And it brings up so many conversations of, well, if she was a white woman, would they be talking this way about her?
Well, an interesting point of the call is at one point, we don't hear what exactly the president of the police guild or whatever have you, which is the guy, you know, who's on the other end. He asks something about the victim. And the officer says, oh, well, you know, oh, she was just a normal person. What exactly was he asking? Was he asking, like, was she a drug addict? Was she a homeless person? And if you are asking that, why would you be asking that? How does any of those factors devalue their life as a human being, you know, diminish their victimhood? This division between the community and our police officers, this dehumanization, and this, like, when you have this combative perspective on the people that you're supposed to be serving, this is what happens. And you devalue and, like I said, diminish people's humanity. And it's just not right. We need to have more respect.
Kind of going back to what you said, too, about, like, holding these officers accountable, how they've been working to repair this very fractured relationship with the Seattle community in, you know, particular. They are up for contract renegotiations this year, the police department. They're negotiating for higher salaries. And since 2012, they'd had a federal appointed, I'm losing the word for it, but a federal appointed dude to like check in, you know, see that they're doing things okay and really monitor. Obviously, that wasn't going very well because controversy after controversy is plaguing the Seattle Police Department. But they just ended that contract as well. So for the first time in 10 years, they are not going to be under this federal supervision timeout that they were under before, which just, ugh, it's like, what is going to happen now? You know, if this is what they were like while being held federally accountable, what kind of a fucked up police state are we going to enter into the next 10 years? With that, anything to add before we move on to a better story?
Not that I can think of other than, you know, my condolences to the victim and everyone who was a part of her life. She did have value. She had a whole lot of value. And it's not right that her memory is being tarnished like this by these officers who took her life. They need to take accountability and say, yeah, you know, we fucked up and they need to be respectful. It doesn't matter what you think about somebody's personal choices or who they are as a person, even in the case of the break room incident with Demarius Butts. You can believe whatever you want to believe about his interactions with the police on the day that he died, but, you know, he died and we need to have a bit of respect, you know, a bit of decorum.
Yeah, actually, that was so important. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, Benny, before we moved on. Because, yes, 100%, her life mattered. Darius Butts' life mattered. You listening, your life matters, in case you needed to hear that today. And if she had been a homeless person, her life still would have mattered.
Exactly.
And a drug addict. If she had been fill in the blank, you know, just because she was a student, just because she was 23, nothing about her background should have made them respond any differently. And I mean, of course they did. Of course, if she had been a man, they would have responded differently. If she had been white, a white man especially, they would have responded differently. I mean, there are so many factors at play here. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who it is you're encountering. Treat people with respect.
Do better. Do better, SPD.
Yes. For all of the pigs listening to this podcast, do fucking better.
I want to believe that we can have policing that is beneficial to the community. And maybe not exactly policing. If we just had some kind of emergency services that would actually benefit the communities that we're in, that'd be great.
Oh my God, yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like mental health.
Yes. Well, because he was responding to a drug overdose. What is a cop going to do? Why is a cop going 75 miles an hour to get to a drug overdose? Who is he going to arrest? Like, that's all cops do. They just arrest. Like, if it was the fire department that was speeding and hit her, like, that would be just as tragic and fucked up.
Which it would never happen.
Yeah.
It would never happen.
It would not. But also, yes, why are police first responders? I think, I said this weekend when I was talking about this, I think that police, just like the president and anybody else that is federally paid, should not be above the law. You should be allowed to speed 75 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone unless you are actively in pursuit. Like if you are chasing down someone else that is going that fast.
At the very least, have your sirens and lights on the entire time, because he did not turn on his siren or his lights until moments before impact. When you have somebody who's oncoming directly, it is very difficult to gauge the exact speed that they're going towards you. And so she didn't even have a chance. But anyways, one more positive news. So we have some brand new news from The View. So it says The View's Sunny Hostin or Hostin, I don't know how to say her name, says she learned gay people can identify each other by scent.
This is so crazy. Wait, do you think you can do that, Benny? Can you smell someone and be like,
I have a pretty good radar, I think. Not
really.
What
do gay people smell like?
I have a terrible radar. Part of that is just that like queer fashion has just become so popular that I cannot tell who's straight and not anymore. You see a king in a crop top and painted fingernails, very well could just be like 100% straight. You know, you see a beautiful gal who's wearing super like chunky boots, like Doc Martens, beanie, some cargo pants.
And she'll talk about her boyfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
and not even like, in a bisexual way. Like,
yeah, there's no telling.
There's
no telling.
Oh my God. That is so true. Like, such a mood, honestly. I went to a friend's wedding last weekend and I was like catching up with these people that I have not seen in a long time. This one girl that I went to high school with, and I brought my partner, and eventually this girl I went to high school with was like, and for context, okay, this girl's got short hair. She's wearing like really cute glasses, kind of like your Penny, and a like patterned butterfly shirt, slacks to a wedding.
That's very gay.
It's very gay. And she like asked me and my partner, was like, oh, are you guys like roommates or like together? I was like, oh, we're together. And she's like, wow, that's so cool for you. Like, everybody thinks I'm gay, but I'm not. But my partner was like, girl, someone needs to share the lesbian master doc with you. Like,
the trouble is too, right? From my like experience, a lot of them will flirt.
Yes.
They'll flirt with me and I don't know what's going on.
It's just, they're so nice, you know?
They're so nice.
What's the difference between like, I like your shirt and...
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Because I've picked up chicks in the past before my wonderful fiance just by saying like, I like your hair. I like your style, you know?
Oh, I
that's
like
the big
your
one.
Style.
I like your style, you know? That's the big one. But now straight women are using that. And I don't know if that means anything.
Yeah.
I'm just like, and now that I'm in a very committed relationship, I, you know, it'd be very awkward if I'm like, you know, ma'am, I'm taken.
Someone comes up to you, they're like,
stop being polite to me.
I really like your outfit. And you're like, I have a girlfriend. Gosh, wait, that reminds me. Sorry. Have you seen Bottoms yet?
No, not yet. I need to.
Okay.
Is it on any of the streaming services or?
No, it's still all in theaters. It's amazing. I'm going to probably go see it a second time before it's out of theaters. I love it. It's so campy. It's so great. It's so gay. But what bothers me is every single person in Bottoms is dating a white man. And this is not to discredit bisexual people that date, like are in, you know, straight passing relationships. Like, you are valid. You are queer. You are a part of the community. You are unfortunately dating a man, and I'm sorry for you, but it's just something that makes me viscerally a bit upset about it. And it's like, to me, it's kind of this same thing. You know what I mean? Like this straight girls appropriating gay culture. I think that there is a difference between like appropriating gay culture, queer baiting, all of these things. And there's definitely something to be said, especially with like that guy from Heartstopper that we've talked about on the podcast before that was like forcibly outed as bisexual because people were trying to cancel him for having a girlfriend. But I think that that's a very different thing because, first of all, his character in Heartstopper is bisexual. Clearly, mm-hmm. People state that he's bisexual. They have a whole like thing about that. And so to have a bisexual person playing a bisexual person is normal. It's good. We should. But when we have like a whole cast of beautiful, queer, bisexual women that are all playing lesbians, and then none of them are in queer relationships IRL, it's like, why not make your characters bisexual? You know, why not add that bisexual representation here? So I think that's just something that bothers me a little bit. I was thinking about that with that. Can you smell the gays when you're watching Bottoms? And everybody looks so fucking gay.
According to Sunny, the talk show's legal expert introduced the theory that gay people can identify other gay people via scent. And, quote, "I'm very embarrassed to admit that my husband Manny and I got so obsessed with this show that we binged that found that gay men have different scent attraction and that homosexual people have a nose for each other." She further elaborated, saying that gay people can actually smell under their arms and in a blindfold test can tell which person is gay and which isn't.
Is it just like if you smell a man and he doesn't smell bad, you're like.
So here's the thing, right? And also lesbians and their cologne. Oh, there is something to be said about a woman wearing cologne. Like, anyway. I also like normal perfume. Like, I love scents. I like perfumes and scents and stuff like that.
Is it like, come on to say, I like your scent. You smell good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. Because there has been research in the past, from my understanding, that if someone smells good to you, it's partly because when you take in somebody's scent, you are kind of subconsciously like going over like some of the markers in that scent as to like whether they make a good genetic match for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, for instance, you're like, if you have siblings, right? Your siblings smell terrible to you. You know, it makes a little bit more sense because, you know, they're not genetically compatible.
Yeah.
And so it could be, there might be some truth to that, that if you're gay and everything like that, that, you know, you can smell certain pheromones and certain signifiers in somebody's scent that would tell you, you know, more about them. And if, you know, if being gay has anything to do with genetics, maybe we can do that, but definitely not consciously. I don't think we could do it consciously.
Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, though, that would make sense about, like, they need to do more studies about this, but people that have friend groups in high school where nobody's out, but, like, then you're adults, you look back and you're like, oh, my God, everybody in my friend group was gay. The gays are attracted to each other, like.
Everybody in my high school knew I was gay before I did.
Yeah, that is a constant theme. They could smell it on you.
They can. Like, Benny, I think you're looking a little too deeply into my eyes. I think you're taking the friendship
like
of the concept of friendship a little too far.
Well, please, listeners, let us know, what do gay people smell like? I want to know what the gay scent is, and I want to know where I can buy it. We have a super great interview to get to, super fun interview. So please stick around, listen to these ads, and then listen to that interview, and we'll be back with more fun stuff. Hello, and welcome back to Radio SGN. Joining me this afternoon is the director of On the Edge, the second International Latinx Festival for 2023, Xavier Lopez, who, by the way, is also 2023's Seattle Mix Gothic Pride, which is amazing. How are you doing today, Xavier?
It has been an amazing year, both good and bad. My parents passed away this last year, and I've been dealing with a lot of that. In fact, not to sound crazy, but there have been ghosts lately, probably because of the Halloween season. My mom seems to be visiting quite frequently. I'm doing excellent. Looking forward to the Latinx Performance Art Festival. And I should say that Latinx is my pronunciation, partially because my name starts with X. So I kind of like, instead of doing the Latinx or Latinx or, you know, any of that, I just go with Latinx because it's because I'm the X-Men. But anyway, so yeah, super excited. We have a great group of people, 8 performers, 1 gothic DJ for the last night, which is going to be a lot of fun. The last night's going to kind of be a few performances, mostly the leads, which would be Catherine Adamenko of New York City, Vicente Montañez of America and Mexico. He's most of his career was in Mexico, but he has also been here for quite a while. And Tatiana Garmendia and Diana Garcia, Lauren Herrera. Now I'm just saying all the different performers, but on Saturday, it should be a lot of fun. We're going to end with kind of a goth dance party, a Latinx goth dance party.
So that is so cool. For people that are interested, how can they get tickets or attend?
Well, it's absolutely free and you just want to show up. We will have the schedule. Actually, the schedule is up on Facebook. I don't have that address right in front of me, but if you do Latinx Performance Art Festival on Facebook, I'm sure you can find it. So it's going to be 3 days. The first day will be nonstop performances from, I believe it's 1:30 to 4:30. Or maybe it's 1 to 4:30. I'll double check. And then we have presentations on the artists on the second day, and that's a shorter schedule. And then on Saturday is the final day, which is going to be like 3 or 4 performers. I will perform my bigger piece of 2. Catherine Adamenko and Vicente Montañez are also scheduled to perform. Yeah. And then we'll end it with a goth dance party.
So that sounds super cool. So this is going to be the second International Latinx Festival. How will it differ from the last one?
Well, a lot has changed from the first one to the last one. The first one was in 2016 before the pandemic, and we started to plan to have a sequel. We found out that we were actually the very first Latinx festival in apparently the whole world. Wow. And it was covered by Marvin Carlson in his book, Performance and Introduction. And we got called out by name, which was really awesome. And we were like, oh my gosh, we really need to do a sequel. We need to do something that is amazing and bigger. And so we contacted the folks at 4Culture. We contacted the folks at the Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, COCA as well. And we were like, let's go and let's do this. And then of course the pandemic happened and everything got stalled. And we're finally having the second one in 2023 in October, October 5th through 7th.
Have you been planning?
I didn't answer your question, though.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, you can continue. I was just going to ask, have you been planning since then, 2016? Have you been on the committee?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of my baby. With Lauren Davis of La Sala, we have been planning to do it since 2016. Yeah, since we got off the stage that one night. And from then on, we were like, well, we got to do another one.
So, yeah, I guess going back, how will this one be different from 2016's? Aside from like, there's way more music now.
There's more people. The first one was like 3 people. It was very, very small, but, you know, very, I called it expansive, but like it was really trying for what it did, for what it was. And this one will have more people. We have 3 days instead of just 1. We have a better stage. The folks at King Street Station have been amazing. Call out to James and Ben. And everyone else, but especially and Ots, those 3 have been amazing, and we've been and having a great time working with them and preparing for the event. Oh, and then we'll have food. Yeah, it's gonna be just a big old party, basically.
That's so cool. Is the food gonna be catered, or what kind of meal options are gonna be there?
Yeah, we will have catering and then tamales and like Mexican bread and stuff like that.
And
it will be Mexican or Latino, I should say. I think in this case, it's going to be mostly Mexican for the food, but our performers come from everywhere. We have people from Cuba and we have Jewish/Latino. I think she's also from Cuba. We have a few different places that are represented. we're working on it to be more representational.
Thank you. And if my language is incorrect, please correct me. But why do you feel it's so important to have like such a diaspora of Latino culture represented and not just Mexico or Colombia, you know, specific events for different ethnicities there?
It's very, very hard, but it's also super important. So as a non-binary, queer, Latinx performance artist / mixed media artist / what else did I have in there? Romantic, goth, all these things. Intersectionality is very important to me. And Latinx is like the very, one of the very first of the new ideas behind identity that is more inclusive than it is essentialist. And so it's very important to me to try and make this performance art festival as inclusive as possible.
Thank you so much. And we mentioned earlier on, before we started recording and a little bit after the recording, the difference between a couple terms, Latinx, Latin, and Latino. And I was just wondering, for some of our viewers that may not be familiar, if you could explain the difference between those phrases and where they should be used appropriately.
I'm not sure that I can. I'm not sure that I have the credentials for that. Let's see. So Latinx is intersectional, very much inclusive. It seeks to deconstruct the idea of an essentialist identity of Latino-ness. And Latino is just basically covers all, it's like the Hispanic diaspora, use the word diaspora. And in Latino is very, very diasporous and intersectional by nature. We are one of the few groups that has every race represented. And then what was the third one? Latin? Yes. The Latin one seems to be a little bit of reaction to the Latinx, partially because it's harder to say, but also I think that it's kind of more, a slightly more conservative term.
Thank you. Going back to the topic of intersectionality, why do you feel it is so important to treat events that celebrate intersectionality, especially in the Latinx community?
So personally, if I was going to be part of a movement, if I was going to be part of an idea, something that I could stand with, it was important to me that that be as non-essentialist, non-binary, that it be as inclusive as possible. And one of the things that really attracts me to Latinx, is that it has more of a queer and feminist background to it. And that, I believe, is one of the things that sets it apart from the more traditional ideas of identity in the Latino community.
Thank you so much. And then you also mentioned a little earlier about how the Latinx community is just so full of diversity, including, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, Black Latinx people, Asian Latinx people, et cetera, and how everybody is really welcome at this event. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on what it means to you to be a part of such a diverse community.
So for me, it means that it's more open and willing to entertain the ideas of identity as being a complex thing. I believe that one of the most important issues of our age right now is identity, that we are all becoming more aware of our individual stories. And one of my goals as an artist and as even in this is to focus on the individual stories of these artists, of these performers. In making this event and set series of events, it was important to me to make sure that it be as inclusive and open as my own work is. And so that way we see that through having different genders represented, different identities represented, different stories represented.
Thank you so much for elaborating there. Kind of on this topic of representation, especially through intersecting identities, I've noticed a lot of people have mentioned like the general LGBTQ community is often very exclusionary, very white when it's depicted in media. How do you think the general LGBTQ community can increase representation of Latinx people and intersectionality?
You know, that has not been my experience, but I'm sure that is true. Like, I'm part of the Gothic community, LGBTQIA+, and our group is, it represents everyone. At Gothic Pride, we've had many different races that have been represented, many different identities that have been represented. So I'm not trying to say that LGBTQIA plus has always been inclusive, but in my experience, and that could be clouded by my positionalities, I've found it to be fairly open and giving and understanding of difference.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing about your experience there. And I actually do have a couple more questions about your experience in the goth community in Seattle.
Sure.
That is so cool. And I know several of our listeners are also involved in Seattle's goth community. So first, just I want to know, when did you first get involved in Seattle's goth community?
Oh, gosh. So we were talking about that. Mike from the Mercury and I were talking about that last night. And apparently I've been there since, at least at the Mercury, since the very beginning. I'm kind of an elder goth. I'm definitely not first wave when you go all the way back to the beginning of history of goths. But I've been a goth since I was like 16. So, you know, it's been a while.
What does being a goth mean to you?
So goth for me is, it's an identity that I choose. It's an identity that, well, I mean, first of all, I love the music. I feel it. But also there's this romantic love of life that I find that is very affirming in the goth community. And it's something that you really don't know until you're actually part of it.
Could you describe that a little bit more? Where do you find the love of life? And I don't mean that in any negative way.
Oh, I'm sure. So I think that a lot of people think that we sit around and we're gloomy and, you know, down and just spend our times thinking about death and the horrible things. But the people that I've known in the goth community have been some of the most creative and amazing and open people. And, you know, most of them have something else going on. Like there's goth artists and goth performers. And I know a lot of people who are in bands. And it's just, I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe all other communities are like this. But it just seems like for me, it's more of a home and a family.
That's so cool. And how do you feel, does your queerness interact with your goth identity?
I think that identity is this complex thing. And for me, I like to go back to the idea of the intersectionality. I think that we tend to, especially as people of color, we tend to get pigeonholed. People think that they can figure us out in one or two sentences. Oh, you're Latino. Oh, you're Black. Oh, you're Asian. So then I know there's this, you probably speak that language. You probably, you know, dress this way, you eat this stuff. I'd like to question that. I think that we are, all of us, all colors, all races, all identities, we are complex. And you can't figure us out in just one sentence. You can't figure us out in just one idea. In history, a lot of, especially people of color, especially people of color who are artists, have had to subsume their individual identities into a corporate identity, into, you know, the Halloween art, the Day of the Dead art, into politics. I have a series called Just Be, which is essentially me just sitting there or me just walking, and the pieces are filmed in medias res. And oftentimes we forget that as humans, as individuals, as people of color, our stories of just being are as important as the times that we're radical, as the times that we are fighting for our rights, as the times that we are doing all the things that we have to do because we're also people of color. But sometimes we just have our stories to tell. And I think that is why this performance art festival for me is so important, because this is the chance for my performers, for my friends now, to just tell their stories.
That's important. And that is such a great answer. Thank you so much. I really appreciated that. And kind of speaking of, I guess, just being, before we wrap up, I did want to ask you about your plans for the rest of the day, which you mentioned early on, that you are going to Spirit Halloween, which is one of my favorite places to go to. So I want to know, what are your plans? Are you Halloween costume shopping, Halloween decor, or just, you know, going for the vibes?
Well, probably all of that, but definitely I have to get a couple of pieces for one of my performances. I need to see if I can find some green gloves and some tights. And then after that, I get to go to the ballet and I write reviews. Those are on my culture blog. But yeah, I'm just going to spend the afternoon looking at goth stuff, looking at Halloween stuff, I should say. But yeah, home decor is definitely on the list.
And are you able to elaborate a little bit on what the tights and gloves are going to be for, what the outfit kind of looks like? Or is it a surprise that people are going to need to actually go to the event to see?
You are absolutely right. If you want to know why I'm buying gloves and tights, then you're going to have to come, especially to Saturday's events. Come to all three. But yeah, I'm not going to tell you.
I love it. I love the mystery. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Let's see. Just that we have a really good group of performers, some whose performances I've never seen before, and I'm excited about that. We have Catherine Ademenko from New York. We have Vicente Montañez from Mexico, and Diana Garcia from Mexico, and Tatiana Garmendia from Cuba, and several others. But it should be just a lot of fun, and it should actually open people up to different ideas of what it means to do Latinx performance.
So thank you so much. So thank once you. Again, this has been Xavier Lopez. They are the 2023 Seattle Mixed Goth, as well as the director of On the Edge, the second international Latinx festival that is going to be happening very soon. And you don't need a ticket. It's free. You can also catch Xavier at their solo show at Coca next year. And they are currently working on a Latino Futurist exhibition that is still looking for a home. So if you have a home for that, definitely reach out. And again, thank you so much for being our show. Have so much fun at Spirit Halloween. I'm sure you don't get as scared of the animatronics that jump out as I do, but just in case, be safe.
Thank you. It has been my pleasure.
And we're back. That was a great interview. Incredible. Super fun. I love talking with that person that I talked to. Real quick, joining us on the back end of this show is soon-to-be staff writer, hopefully, contributing writer, just received their diploma in the mail. Cameron is here for more Reddit and the Asshole Stories. They brought several for us to read.
I took the time to put the titles in there, so we have stuff to choose from, whatever is really tickling our pickles right now. Whatever one looks interesting.
All right, so I, 29, male, am a gay man with many queer friends of various sexual and gender identities. I am in a long-term relationship and actually love other people's kids, but I am uninterested in ever having children of my own. 2 years ago, one of my oldest closest friends, a lesbian who we'll call M, now 30 female, and her wife asked me if I would consider donating sperm so that they could have a child. I love M as much as I love anyone, and was super honored that she asked. I said yes. M and her wife now have a lovely baby girl who I act as an uncle towards, and who I love very much in a this is not my child, but I hope to know her for the rest of my life kind of way. About a month ago, another good friend, non-binary, call them J, 28, and their partner, non-binary, 33, told me that they were also interested in having a child. In case it's not obvious, they are both biologically female, so they can't have kids together.
It was not obvious to me, but continue.
They told me that they were wowed by how well my decision to donate for M had worked out, and were hoping to do the same. They told me that they would be honored if I would consider it, and that they'd love it if I had the same sort of relationship with their child that I do with M's daughter. In the past, I have told many of my friends that I would be open to donating again under the right circumstances, and in fact, there is yet another lesbian couple that I am quite close with that I've discussed donating to once they reach that point. Like I said, I love kids, and as long as I'm not considered a father in any way, I don't mind spending 10 minutes giving people I love the opportunity to live their domestic dreams. However, with Jay and their partner—
Wait, how many minutes? I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, I don't mind spending 10 minutes— That's a good catch. Yeah, I don't mind spending 10 minutes.
So the guy can yank it?
Yeah.
Where?
You see, I don't have a penis, so...
Well, I was thinking, like, they were going to go with, like, 10 minutes to, like, visit this kid or something, but I think it's 10 minutes to jerk off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is that fast or slow?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to think, too. Maybe it's average.
I know. I feel like the average is 5.
5?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Wait, how old is this dude? How old is this?
Oh, 29.
29. Oh, the average jerk-off time for a 29-year-old male is actually 7 minutes, so he is a slightly below average, but
Anyways, so however, with Jay and their partner, if I'm being honest, I don't think they're ready to have children. The two of them have been off and on for several years, with both of them cheating on each other at various points, the last time being only about 6 months ago. I care about them both very much, but they're honestly pretty immature. I didn't feel comfortable with the idea of being involved with their rash decision to have a kid, so I told them that while I was honored they asked, I wouldn't be able to donate. I didn't tell them why, but obviously, they've heard me say before that I'd be down to donate again, so they were understandably surprised that I declined. After they pressed me for my reasoning, I told them that I didn't feel comfortable giving a child to a couple that I honestly didn't think were ready for it. They were very offended. They told me that it's not my place to judge whether they're ready for kids, and that it's messed up that straight couples can knock each other up whenever they want, but queer couples have to be considered worthy of it. Obviously, I'm under no legal or moral obligation to produce any child that I don't want to produce, but I do understand that I've really hurt my friends, and a lot of our extended friend group is super pissed at me right now, so I'm here looking for some perspective.
So, Lindsay, you don't see what the audience, what they think, so what do you think, asshole or not?
I think asshole. I don't know. I don't think it's, I mean, this guy should be able to say whether or not these people are ready for a kid, you know? What do you think?
I also read it. I say not the asshole.
Oh.
Not just because it's this dude's sperm. I don't know. Like,
oh, well, I guess, yeah. You should be able to say, like, no. No sperm for you.
I will not jerk off for you. I'm so sorry.
But I mean, like, if you went to a sperm bank and donated, you wouldn't have the same, like, say over how your sperm is used, you know?
True. But they're also expecting him to have a relationship with that child. And at that point,
yeah, that's a bit much.
You have this emotional connection with this child that you don't know is going to have a good home life. Like, yeah. I definitely wouldn't want to do that, you know? Because, like, in the past, I've definitely, like, offered to friends with fertility issues, like, yeah, just you can take my eggs. I don't care. But at the end of the day, like, if it's anonymous, like with a lot of these donation services, or at least like there's a distance between you and the product of your decision, you know, it's a little bit more understandable. But when you expect to have this closeness, you know, and to grow this relationship and really care about this kid, I feel like that's really different.
I wonder who this gay guy is that is friends with so many lesbians. Because, like, I've never, all the gay men I know are like friends with a bunch of straight girls, and then they're like, ew.
That's not the case where I am.
Really?
I guess it depends on the area. There's some areas that are just like, just have flocks of lesbians, and then like one gay man for every like lesbian friend group. So
I guess he is that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Token man. Interesting. Or I don't know, maybe they could find a compromise. Like, if these people can prove that they are,
I don't know, if they've been cheating on each other.
I don't believe in them.
You don't believe in them?
I don't believe in them. I'm sorry.
You're just like producing a kid just to experience divorce. Like,
yeah, that is true.
Like, pros, they get two Christmases. Cons, like, emotional damage.
Cons, you're bringing life into the world. I think from like an anti-child perspective, he should hold on to his sperm and not give it to anybody. Scientists predict the collapse of civilization will come by the middle of this century.
I don't know. If you want a kid that bad, go to a sperm bank or
adopt.
Or adopt. Yeah.
Yeah, that kid's, yeah. If it's like grow up as an orphan or grow up with divorced lesbian parents, I'd rather have divorced lesbian parents because at least I'd get Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. And you know that those Christmases would be good.
The L word playing on repeat for hours and hours,
yeah,
and hours.
You would have
Harry
so
Potter
many
Christmas
gay aunts. Like,
I think the point they made, though, about, like, how straight couples can just, like, have a kid, I think that's so valid, though. Like, you know what I mean? There's such a, gay people, you have to have, like, a financial stability to have children. You can't just,
there's so many hoops.
Pregnant.
Well, that's true. How is it this guy's fault?
Yeah, exactly. Like, at the end of the day, like, his bodily autonomy takes precedent, in my opinion, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, he's not the asshole, then.
Yep.
Do we have another am I the asshole? Do we have time for one more?
Am I the asshole for winking at a Christian girl?
What? Yeah, let's see what that is.
Oh, I need to know that.
So I, 18 female, was in school the other day. How unusual, I know. We were discussing societal issues, and after talking for a while, we landed on being a gay person in this day and age in our country. My teacher mentioned a statistic that states that on average, every 10th person is gay / not straight. Upon hearing that aforementioned Christian girl snickered and whispered loud enough so that everyone could hear it. The original poster, they didn't put their name, so OP is definitely one of those lesbians. So I just turned around, winked at her, and said, "You wish." Admittedly, I had that idea from an old Tumblr post icon. After I said it, she turned pale and was clearly shaken, asking me how I could accuse her of such a thing. I just laughed and told her to loosen up a bit. A few classmates also laughed, and she started crying and had to leave the classroom. At the time, I didn't feel bad, and I still don't, not really. But both my teacher and a few classmates told me after the lesson to go and apologize. And I should have known not to say such a thing to her, since she is very openly very Christian, and being a gay is a big no-no in her eyes. I refused to apologize, and I haven't spoken to her since. It all happened last Friday. But I still get some evil stares from her general direction, so I'm wondering if I should just suck it up and apologize.
No.
Edit. So I won't apologize, as this is what most of you agree on. But I don't think I'll keep winking at her either. It sure would be funny, but I don't think I'll push it since she already seems to be at her limit. Also, thanks for all the comments, attention, and awards. I'm gonna keep it real with you guys. There is always that small hope that more than 5 people see your post.
Yeah, definitely not the asshole. The Christian girl is the ass. Did you have a Christian girl in your high school like this? Because I definitely did.
I went to Catholic high school.
For a little while, I was that girl.
No, Benny.
I was a self-hating gay, and I was like, you know, I used religion a lot with that. And it wasn't until I started realizing in high school, I'm like, oh, shit. Women are hot, and I can't change that.
14, Benny. I'm so sorry.
I was always pretty open about it in high school because, like, middle school, I was like, I don't want to be in the closet. But once I got to high school, I'm going to be out and open.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Yeah, I came out when I was 12.
Wow.
Seriously?
Yeah, I came out when I was 12.
Congrats.
Wow. Couldn't be me.
I was 21, maybe.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I still haven't had that conversation with my dad, but.
I went, like, back and forth.
And you work here and he doesn't
talk to me very much. He's our, yeah.
Okay.
I did the whole thing where I still wasn't fully accepting it. So I was just like, haha, maybe I'm bisexual.
Oh, I thought that
too. And then I was just like, no, I am very ambivalent about the existence of men.
Anyways.
Oh yeah. Cameron, continue.
9th grade comes along. You know, I'm living my best gay life. I'm very open about it. And, you know, my friends are super accepting, but. Someone comes up to me and goes, I heard in the hallway someone said, I think Cameron Martinez is gay. People were like gossiping about me. I was like, what the hell? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing happened to me.
Just weird
which
stuff
it was,
like that.
Honestly, it was kind of warranted in my case because I was so obviously queer, but just like so much in denial that it was obvious to everyone. Like there was like these couple of girls that would, you know, make comments every now and again. And one day they actually asked me if I was gay, and I was just like, no, I'm straight as a ruler. And then one of the girls went, bendy rulers. They got me. Yeah. But yeah.
I was also very heavily closeted Christian kid. Like you, Benny, we grew up in the same town.
Yeah.
So it made sense.
On brand for Spokane.
Yes, on brand. I don't know. I was like, I don't want to say nonconformist, but like I would try to irritate the hell out of the really Christian girl in my high school. I would just say things I knew would like set her off. Well, I won't name her. She's a ginger bitch that used to paint the covers of Bibles and sell them. That was her job after college. Now she's married. But yeah, no. I was like deeply convinced myself. I was like, I'm straight. I have a crush on this one boy, and I had a crush on him in 7th grade, and I still love him. And I just convinced myself this. And then I had a crush on a girl. I was like, I hate her. And I feel this way. I hate her so much. That's why I dream about her and think about her 24/7. Because I want to beat her. It was usually in sports.
I want to beat her in some way.
I can't believe I couldn't catch on to like my own feelings. Because the way I went about it was like, I would just kind of like pick a random dude. I would just be like, he's available. And, you know, it seems like, you know, check some of the boxes, you know, straight relationships. It's normal for it to just be like friends but with an extra label. So I'll just play video games at his house and we will never, ever touch.
Damn, Benny, that's pretty gay.
Yeah. And then when it came
straight
to
girls that play video games.
Yeah, and then when it came to the gals that I had crushes on that I wasn't even aware of, like internally, I was just like, I'm just such a good friend. I would die for her. Whilst dudes were just like, yeah, bro, I guess we'll play Call of Duty in your basement and awkwardly sit there.
While your mom gives us nachos or whatever.
And you like salivate over the mom.
Well, yeah. Fortunately, none of the dudes I ever dated had hot moms.
I just love the way
moms.
She makes...
Ugh, such a missed opportunity.
I just love the way she makes Totino's pizza rolls. It's so good.
I love the Totino's pizza rolls SNL sketch. That's my Roman Empire. I think about that. Well, Cameron, did you have like a high school girlfriend or anything? I just want to know what the life of being out in high school was like, because I fantasize about this. I'm like, what would life have been like if me and all my gay friends actually talked about the fact that we were all gay?
I was such a goddamn virgin.
I did at one point when I was in high school and I was like becoming aware and everything like that. But I was in that phase where I'm just like, haha, I might be bisexual, that kind of thing. One of my friends who was very much bisexual was like, well, we could figure that out. And I was like, we were hanging out at my house, right? And like, you know me, like I'm a very like monogamous, committed person. Like if I do anything with anybody, I'm like, all right, we're life partners now. Like I'm your problem. I'm attached to your hip now. So I couldn't really allow myself to do that. But I was just like, one boob squeeze. And that was the extent of my high school experience.
And then you fantasized about it for years.
I was like, I will not fully take up the offer, but I will take a one titty.
One titty.
Well, one titty.
Would either of you have made a fight club in your high school to get chicks?
If I had the option and I knew that that would get me laid, yeah.
Yeah, if I'd been out.
I was so freaking desperate. Oh my God. I was at that level. Like watching that movie, I was like,
that's great.
Does it bother you that everybody in that movie is dating a white man?
In real life.
Wait, in real life?
Yes. I was talking about this with Benny earlier in the podcast. Every single person in Bottoms is dating a white man.
That kind of ruins it for me.
Yeah.
Damn, that kind of killed the vibe.
Let's see.
Yeah. I'm sorry to kill the vibe. Well, I would say I had absolutely no gay moments in high school at all. I don't think so.
What was your guys' most closeted behavior?
Oh, me and my partner, who's my partner now, we were friends for like 3 years before I started dating. One semester, it was just us. We had no other, like all the rest of our friends were studying abroad. And we decided to go explore the guys only dorm. Then we heard these guys coming, didn't want to get in trouble because we weren't invited there because we were weird. So we hopped into a tiny little closet, held the door closed while we were in this closet. These guys came into the rec room and they're like, I think people are making out in the closet. We were like, shit. And then they opened the door and we're just sitting there. We're not making out in the closet, but we were both in the closet.
My most closeted behavior
was that
through the entirety of like growing up, I was terrified of getting like dressed or undressed in any situation in like the locker rooms or at sleepovers or different things like that. And
oh,
so
true, that's a vibe.
Literally all of my sleepovers growing up, right, would have all the girls come over. And at one point in time, I lived in an apartment complex with a pool, right? So we all had to get ready for the pool. My most closeted behavior was that whilst all of my friends were in my room, getting into their swimsuits and everything like that, I literally stepped into my own closet to change. Because I was so terrified. For some reason, like, I couldn't bear it. Like, even in the locker rooms, like, I would not change in front of anybody. I would keep my eyes to the floor, and I would scurry as fast as I could to the showers or the bathroom stalls to change. And for some reason, in my head, I was just like, I'm just being respectful because for some reason this makes me feel weird. And I didn't investigate further those feelings.
So relatable. Cameron, what was your most closeted growing up experience? Did it also involve a closet?
No, I wasn't actually out to my mom until I was like 16. So that's a funny story. I actually wrote about it. It was the first time I ever smoked weed. And I started freaking out.
Oh my God, no.
And like, saying I'm gay was just like my catchphrase. So like we were talking, she's like, is there anything else you want to say? I'm like, I'm gay. I'm like, She's like, oh, I know. I'm like,
I love that.
No, you don't. Not exactly a closeted moment. Bit of a tangent. I would just always be like, yeah, mom, she's just really cool. Like, and it's like, just really cool. I don't know. I just like her as a friend. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just like stuff like that. And she'd be like, oh, yeah, totally.
I think the thing is that like a lot of my family didn't catch on because I have a feeling that a lot of my family is like secretly gay.
Yeah.
So
it is genetic.
None of them caught on.
Do they smell gay to you?
You know what? I think so.
Yeah. So yeah, this has been our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Please pick up a copy of the SGN. Check us out online at sgn.org and follow us on our socials, especially Instagram, which Cameron runs. And thank you to Cameron and to Benny and to our wonderful guests this week. Thanks for listening and kiss your dogs.
Goodbye.
Radio SGN is hosted by Benny Loy and Lindsay Anderson and edited by Daniel Lindsley. The music for the show is provided by TRG Banks and Jesse Spillane or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org. This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.